Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubas Daf Mem Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 6 lines from the top of Daf Mem Gimel. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side, we have a nosei, a topic heading. We also indicate that this goes till Omid Beis, long topic. Bas Hanizones Min Ho'achim. A girl that is supported by her brothers. In other words, we have a man who had a family. The man, the father died, leaving sons that essentially inherit the estate. As far as the laws of inheritance are concerned, sons and daughters, when they are in the same family, the sons inherit, the daughters do not inherit. However, the daughters are provided with support, with sustenance, through something called a tnai ksuba. When the man, when the father married children's mother, the girl's mother, in the ksuba, the financial guarantee that a woman who gets married is provided with, there's also a clause that says that any girls that you produce together with me, they will continue dwelling in my house after his demise and receive maintenance or support from his estate until they get married. So we're dealing with that situation of a girl who's living in her father's home after her after his death, and they're receiving, the daughters are receiving support through what we'll refer to henceforth as the Tnai Ksuba, the Ksuba conditions. We continue reading our note on the side. The income that this girl produces, who benefits, who receives it? Machlokes Rav Sheshes Rav Yosef. We'll see a machlokes between these two authorities, Rav Sheshes Shel Achim. According to Rav Sheshes, the brothers receive that. They receive her income. And Rav Yosef Shela. According to Rav Yosef, it is hers. Of course, when the father was alive, so the father who is supporting his daughters gets in exchange the daughter's income. But now we're talking about the father is out of the picture. We look back, we go to now the Gemara text, 6 lines from the top. You can see there's a slashed line in the middle of the line. Bomine Rabbi Avino Merav Sheshes. Rabbi Avino asks, Bas Hanizonis Min Ho'achin, a girl, a daughter, that's being supported through her brothers. Now, as we already explained, it's a function of the brothers having inherited their father's estate, but she derives sustenance from that very estate. So she's called Nizonis, more like mozon, food. She's being fed from her brothers who had inherited her father's estate. Maisa Yodelami, the income that she produces, who benefits from that? The question is presented in an Aleph Odilma Bayes fashion, two sides of analysis. B'mokim av kaimi, do we say that the brothers are instead of the father? Just like if the father was alive, he would benefit from her income. So too, they stand in his stead. Therefore, they get her income. Or possibly, they are not like the father. Hasam Mididei Mitzina. There, the father is the one who is providing her sustenance. So in exchange for his paying for her sustenance, she gives him her income. Hachalav Mididhu Mitzina. Here, it's not that they're paying out of their pocket for her sustenance. It's her sustenance is as a result of the legal conditions that we called before the Tnai Ksubas, maybe in the merit of her mother having married the father, and through that marriage she was provided through the Ksubas, through the Tnai Ksuba that we mentioned, the Ksuba conditions. Omar Lay, now we have a triangle. You'll notice as you skim down with your eye, the triangles appear in quite an abundance, and also in alternating directions. This will take us all the way till the Mishnah on the upper part of Omid Beis. So on the side, under the Mivneh heading, this is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the give-and-take style of the Gemara. With the point facing up, this reflects Tshuvas Rav Sheshis and Tshuvos Avurot. Rav Sheshis' response and points that are stated in the Gemara in his defense. The inverted triangle represents neged Rav Sheshis, something problematic or against Rav Sheshis. So now, the question has been raised. Rav Sheshis responds, Omar Lei Tanisuha. Rav Sheshis says to Rabbi Avina, in order to derive your answer, take a look at the following Tanaic source. It says, Almona nizoynes minichsi yisaymim umaisi yodel shelahen. A widow derives her sustenance from the estate that the orphans inherited, and her income, her work, her income goes to them. Now, the thought at this point is that, well, you see that the almona's income goes to the heirs, so to the daughter's income shall go to the heirs. Rashi adds that you see that the heirs are bimkom aviem. They stand in their father's stead. The Gemara responds, the nose attacks Rav Sheshis' answer, Midomi, how can you compare almanoso lo nicho le baharvocha, bito nicho le baharvocha? With regard to one's almona, the widow that a man leaves, the man isn't interested in her enriching herself. She's provided for by the estate, and in exchange for the provisions that she receives, she gives the heirs her income. However, a man's daughter, the father was interested in her profiting. So that in addition to the sustenance, the father would be very happy for his daughter to profit. So that you can't conclude from the laws concerning Maise Yodayim of the Almona to the laws concerning the Maise Yodayim of one's daughter. You notice there's a bracketed section that appears. On the side we have a note, Hezbra Sograim, explaining these brackets. Besoicha Sograim, Agamora Makshe al Hadachia, Demi Domi, Avulkushizu Mituretzes, Velochein Nisheres Dachiazu. Within the brackets, there's going to be a challenge to the mi domi rejection of Rav Sheshis. But whatever question is raised within the brackets, a response will be given, so that we basically remain with the dechia, against Rav Sheshis. Now, you'll notice that after the brackets, you see Mosiv Rav Yosef. The markings here are extremely helpful. This is again an attack on Rav Sheshis. Hence you see a second, inverted triangle, second in a row. We have the Mi Domi, which was a rejection of Rav Sheshes, and now, after the brackets, a Mosiv Rav Yosef as well. With the structure hopefully being clear, let's now go into the bracketed section. Lemeimra debito adifole me'almanoso. With the statement of at the inverted triangle, we said the almana, the husband wasn't so interested in her profiting, but by the daughter he was interested in her profiting. Therefore, she should keep her maisi yadayim, and you can't conclude the laws of maisi yadayim from the way we treat almana. So it would imply that the bito adifa leimel also, that a father has more concern for his daughter than he does for his widow. The Omar Rabbi Abba, Omar Rav Yosi, Osu Almona Eitzel Habas, person who dies leaving a widow and a daughter. So in terms of a hierarchy of who gets first claims to aspects of the estate, we make the Almona next to the bas, kibas eitzel achin, b'nechosim muatin. There's a lot packed into this brief line of Gemara. Nechosim muatim is a situation where a man dies leaving very little by way of an estate. And how do we say he leaves little? There isn't enough in the estate to sustain the heirs for a period of 12 months. So it's called a limited estate. So there are rules that apply when you have nechos muatim that will say supersede the basic rules of inheritance. Basic rules of inheritance assume that the man leaves a reasonable or large estate, and the bulk of the estate is inherited by the sons, and at the same time there's mizonos provisions for the women folk that remain. What happens though if it's a small estate? So now the rule that we're learning states that an almona in the presence of a daughter, that means there's a widow and there's a daughter, is treated, the almona is treated relative to the bas, kibas eitzel achin b'nechosim watim, and now that is explained. Ma habas eitzel achin, habas nizaynis v'achin shalab sochim. Just like a sister, so you have dealing with sister and brothers, or you have the daughter versus the deceased sons, the rule is that the limited estate will go to the daughter, and her brothers, the achim, the fellow sons, they'll go begging at doors. Af almona etzel abas, so too when it comes to you have a very limited amount of money and it's a matter of who is going to get that for their sustenance. Af almona etzel abas, almona nizaynis, the widow, she will derive the benefit of the estate, the habas tishal apsochem, and the daughter will go knocking at doors for her maintenance, for her sustenance. So what do we see? We see that a man places there's greater premium or concern with regard to the almona more so than the bas, than the daughter. The Gemara says it all depends on what funds are we talking about. L'inyan zilusa, when it comes to something of a denigrating nature, zilusa, cheapening nature, a person who has to knock on doors begging for handouts, that's an issue of zilzal, an issue of zilusa. So in order to we'll call it the that means then in other terms preservation of dignity. Regarding that concern, almanosoi adifale, a man's the deceased's concern over his widow is greater than his concern over his daughter. He's interested in preserving his wife's dignity. The inyan harvocha, but when it comes to matters of profiting Bito Adifale. His concern for his daughter to profit is greater than his concern for the Almona to profit. Mosiv Rav Yosef. Maisi Odeo Mitziosa, Afopishalo Gopsa, with regard to her income and found articles, even if she didn't collect, Mei Soav Hare Hein Shel Achin. When the father dies, it goes to the man's sons, i.e., her brothers. Taima de Bechayav. The reason that the brothers inherit is we're talking about profits or income that she produced while the father was alive. So when as soon as it was produced, even if the profits or the income wasn't actually paid to her or to her father, it nevertheless becomes something that the father has rights to. Once again, it was produced while the father was alive. However, as she continues to work and producing new income after her father dies, she would get it. We dashed under Latzma. My love, the Nizoinus. Is it not so that this source is talking about a girl that is receiving support from her brothers, and yet the Maisi Adayim are Latzma? If you like, you can using the markings, you can compare this dashed underline to the dashed underlining that we did when Rav Sheshes gave us his answer, and there you saw Maisi Adayim Shelahen. The question Rav Yosef is presenting indicates that Maisi Odea Le'atzmo, and that is a problem for Rav Sheshes. Well, Rav Sheshes will answer, B'she'eino Nizonis. This case is where she's not receiving any support. Just imagine the man died, the father died, leaving no estate. So she's not receiving any support, therefore... Therefore, she keeps her Maisi Adayim. When she's receiving support from the estate, Rav Sheshes said that the sons who are the heirs of the estate, they are in the place of the father. And hence, just like the father would have received it, they receive it. This is a different case. The Gemara asks, and this question lasts a number of lines, Ibashena Nizainis. If the source is describing a case where she's not deriving support, my lameimra, why even bother telling us that? Why tell us that which is obvious? And by the way, when we say telling us, we're referring to the source plus the inference. And the inference is the case of we had two lines above. There was a squiggle underline, Holi Achar Misasav Li Atzma. And now you're telling me that it's a case where Rav Sheshes is going to tell me it's a case she wasn't receiving support. And if she wasn't receiving support, then the question is, isn't all that very obvious? My lameimra, why bother telling me that? Afilu lamanda omar, even according to the opinion, when it comes to slaves, yochal rav lomer leved, asei mi veini zoncha, a person can say to a slave, I want you to work for me, and I am not going to support you. Hani mimi be'evet tnaini, that's a possibility when it comes to a heathen slave that a person purchases, the loksivbe imoch. The word imoch doesn't appear in the context of an evet kanani, aval evet ivri, but when it comes to a Jewish servant, as opposed to a heathen servant, it comes to a Jewish servant, dichtiv be imoch, lo. The word imoch means he shall, when you acquire a Jewish servant, he's to live imoch, with you. Not only with you, which would imply on equal terms, but in fact, on higher terms than yourself. You have to really provide for him. And there's no way you can tell a Jewish servant that you're going to work for me and I'm not going to support you. Kol Shekein Bito, all the more so, that wouldn't be an option with regard to one's daughter. So that if you have a case where she is not being supported because there's simply no estate there, so Of course she's going to keep her own income. Omar Rabo Barula. You can see the triangle is in the same direction as Rav Sheshes. This is in favor of Rav, to bolster, to back up Rav Sheshes. Rabo says that the source that Rav Yosef cited, in fact, is a case where she's not being supported. And you asked, well, isn't it obvious that she keeps her Maisi Adayim? Lo nitzrucha ela lahadofa. This hadofa means extra. The extra beyond that which she needs to support herself, that too she keeps. If we look at Rashi, a few lines up from here, la'adofa li'olam l'diyuka di'la itzdrich. We need the diuk that we highlighted before with the squiggle underlined ha word. La'ashminen, to tell us the ma'is yadel, the achar misasav la'atzma, u'b'sheinon izonis. The income she produces, she keeps, and it's talking about a case where she's not being supported. The low tema, you shouldn't say zchus shezich seter le'av bevitoi mamon hu larisha lebonim, and not to say that the claim that a father has on his daughter's income is viewed as strictly mamon, something that would be subject to inheritance of the sons, that his sons would inherit that. You'll ask, well, isn't it all obvious? How else could she support herself if not through her own income? She's not any worse than an Eved Ivri. Talking about a case where she produces enough money not only to support herself but also to save up in her bank account. And we're telling you that even that she keeps. So at this point, Rav Sheshes and his response that Maisi Adel Shelahen, that was under circumstances where she was being supported by them. Where you see an indication that she keeps her own money, she keeps her income, that's because she's not being supported by them. And hence there's no question on Rav Sheshes. Notice we have an inverted triangle, and we have a long marking as well. So we're now we're going to raise a question, a problem against Rav Sheshes. Omar Rava. Rava comes to, we'll say, strengthen Rav Yosef's question against Rav Sheshes. Rava says, Gavra Rabba to Rav Yosef, a great man like Rav Yosef. Lo yada dika hadafa. Did he not know that this answer could have easily been given? There is hadafa. The kamaisiv tufte, and nevertheless, Rav Yosef raised this as a challenge. So if he's asking the question, then apparently the answer of hadafa, and that's why we need to teach you the source above, is a weak answer. Elo Omar Rava. Rav Yosef Masnisin Gufa Kashile. The question that bothered Rav Yosef was from the source itself, not from the inference, but rather the Masnisin Gufa itself, the source itself. Tikotani had said in the source, Mais Yadel Mitziyosa Avapi Shelo Gofsa. That's a quote from the source above. Mais Yadel means her income, her work that she did, that she's paid for. And Mitziyosa means the articles that she found. And then the source says, even though she didn't collect it. Mitziyosa miman gavya. What is the term? The term collecting a lost article, an item that she found, even though she didn't collect it. The term collection is a term appropriate when someone owes you money, you go collect it from him, you gove it from him. But something that she found, what's the term gofsa? What relevance does the term gofsa have to something that she found? Elolav hachikomar. So Rav Yosef explains that the source is really saying something else. Maisi adal kimitziyasa. Her income is like articles she finds. Ma mitziyasa b'chayav la'av la'achar misas la'av la'atzma. Articles that she finds, when the father is alive, it goes to the father. After the father dies, she keeps it for herself. Af maisi adal nami. So too with regard to income she produces. B'chayav la'av la'achar misas la'av la'atzma. And this week, dashed underline, this is a problem for Rav Sheshes. It becomes clear then that the presence of Mitzios in the source was to serve as a basis of comparison between it and Maisi Adayim. And that comparison states that after the death of the father, she keeps that income. Not like Rav Sheshes. Shma Mino. This is a conclusive challenge to Rav Sheshes. Itmar Nami, and likewise we have it stated like Rav Yosef, Rav Yudam, Rav Bas HaNizenis Minoachin, a girl that's supported from the estate, translated literally means that she's being supported through her brothers that inherited the estate. Maisi Adal Le'atzma, she keeps her own income. Amar Rav Kana, my taima, based on what do you conclude thusly? Diftif, the Pasuk says, regarding inheritance, it says, V'isnachaltem oisim livnechem acharechem. You shall bequeath them. Now here, the them is a reference to avodim k'nanim, heathen slaves that a person owes, that he owns, are passed down to his heirs. And we infer, oisim livnechem, the slaves, the avodim k'nanim, are inherited. They're subject to inheritance on the part of his sons. V'lo b'noseichem livnechem. But one's daughters are not inherited by one's sons. Magid shein odem meirish chus bito livno. This teaches us that a person does not bequeath the benefits that a daughter accrues to his sons. Maskif law rabba. Now, the triangle is pointing up. This would then be in favor of a comment made to favor or to benefit Rav Sheshes' position. So, maskif law rabba. The emo, that which we said that you're not meiris chusbito, that through one's death he doesn't bequeath the rights to one's daughter, that's bepitu yabas uknosos v'chavolos akosuv medaber. The inference that we made from the pasuk of is nachaltem oisim v'nechem achreichem v'lo b'noisechem v'nechem, that's a reference to the fines that she would receive because of seduction or rape or money that she is entitled to because she experienced an injury, those are chavolas. It's regarding those things that the sons don't inherit. But maisi adayim, maybe that does go to them. V'chein tona Rav Chanina, v'pitui habasik nosa chavolas akosim medabrin. Likewise, Rav Chanina taught that the source that says she is entitled to the money, it's money that is received from as a result of injury, that's chavolas. Let's just read that last line. V'chein toner Rav Chanina b'pitui habasu k'nosas v'chavolas akosu medaber. The Gemara asks chavolas tsara de gufa ninhu. The payment made for an inflicted injury is a payment because of the bodily pain that she experiences. This is not considered a schus that a father has in his daughter. We said a few lines up that after quoting the pasuk, conclusion was Magid Shein Odom Mirish Zhus Bito Livno. But you how do you call, and then you say that refers to the zchus bito, that is referring to, amongst other things, chavolas. To say, as Rabba suggests, that chavolas is included in that concept of zchus bito, that is simply inaccurate. It's not something that the father has a zchus in to begin with. Omar Rebbe Yossi Bar Hanina. He responds when the comment was made that chavolos are an example of a father's zchus v'bito. That's shepotza. We're at the top of Omid Beis. Shepotza b'foneha. The attacker, in inflicting the injury, he smashed her face in. And Rashi points out at the top, shepotza b'foneha, the afchusa mikaspa. He thereby causes depreciation. He reduces her value. The isay la'av dilehu. If the father was around, that depreciation would have been something that the father would receive. Da yesh lo ba mecher. After all, the father has a right to sell her. It strikes me. Also, he has a right to marry her off. And now with this potza b'foneha, the father would have ended up losing out on that, and in other words, that would have caused him a loss, and therefore it's something that the payment, the compensation for that, is something that the father is entitled to. As you can see, we have an inverted triangle and also a long marking. This is going to present an approach different than that of Rav Sheshes. Omar Rav Zero, Omar Rav Matona, Omar Rav Yamri Law, another version by way of names, Omar Rebbe Zero. There's no difference by way of the names other than, according to this version, instead of reading it as Rav Zero, which was his title before he came to Eretz Yisrael, after he came to Eretz Yisrael, there's a title change from Rav to Rabbi Zero. And Rashi indicates that the Rabbi title is reflective of his having received smicha, sometimes translated as ordination, might be accurate to say licensing to don, to judge cases of a knas nature. But let's not get off the topic. Simply, it's the same list of names, just as far as Rabbi Zera is concerned, was it said when he was in Bavel or after he came to Eretz Yisrael? And hence you have the Amri Lomer Rabbi Zera, Amrav Matona Marav, Bas Hanizonis Menoachin, a girl who was receiving support from the estate that was inherited by her brothers, Maisi Odea Le Atzma. She keeps her income. And as we said, that is at variance with regard to Rav Sheshes. Dichtiv, and what is this based on? What's the source for saying that she keeps her own Mais Yadayim, and that the brothers don't inherit that? The father, of course, he would have received the Mais Yadayim had he been alive. What we say, that is not something that they inherit. In other words, the continued Mais Yadayim that she produces after he dies. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, V'snachalta moysim levnechem acharechem. The Pasuk we saw already, that one's slaves are bequeathed unto his children. Oysim levnechem levnosechem levnechem. One bequeaths his slaves to his sons, but not his daughters to his sons. Magid, this teaches us, she'ein oda moirish schus bito levno. That a person does not bequeath the rights that he has in his daughter to his son. Omar le avimi bar papi. Shokod omra. So avimi says that Shokod said this. Shokod man, who's Shokod? Answer, Shmuel. Question, v'ha rav omra. Emo af Shokod omra. So when I made a reference to Shokod or to Shmuel, I'm saying not to the exclusion of Rav, but also Shmuel said this. Omar Mor Bar Amemar L'Ravashi. Achi Amri Nardoi, Hilchaso Kavosi de Rav Sheshes. If you were wondering why we have a triangle with a point facing up, it's for this very reason, because here you have a ruling that rules like Rav Sheshes, that the Maisi Daya, that the income she produces will go to her brothers. Rav Ashi Omar, Hilchaso Kavosi de Rav, which is not like Rav Sheshes, and we saw that earlier, that it's Maisi Daya is Le'atzmo. And the Gemara itself rules like Rav, that the Maisi Yodea she keeps. And even though she's receiving support from the estate that her brothers inherited, they do not appear as if they're in the standing in their father's stead. Before we continue with the Mishnah, we glance at the side. We have a nosei, a topic heading, which reads, Mosai ho'av zakai ligvois ksubasa u'mosai hi zoicheba. The ksuba is the financial guarantee that a woman receives upon her marriage that says that in the event that she is divorced, so a certain minimum amount of money will be paid. We often talk about the ksuba of a basula, 200 zuz will be paid. We're focusing on a situation where the girl is quite young yet. She's still in her father's, she was in her father's domain. He married her off, but she didn't consummate the marriage. That is referred to as erusin, the first stage of the marriage. And now we look at the Mishnah, Hama'aris is Bito, Vigirsha. Father married off the daughter, and she was divorced from the Erusin stage. And then Irsa, Vinis Armala. He then married her off to a second man, and he died, leaving her an Almona. Ksubosa, Shelo. The Ksuba payment goes to the father. We look at Rashi, Ksubasa Shalav, there's a star in the Rashi as well. Ksuba Shehi Goiva Mishnei Erusin Halolu, the Ksuba that she collects from these two different husbands, Vikosova Yesh Ksuba Rusan, the feeling is, or the thinking is, that a Ksuba is paid even though the marriage was not consummated, even though she's an Arusa, Uvimei Naris Vikatnis Komar, and the Mishnah is speaking about a girl who is still within the age bracket of Naris, under 12 and a half, or Katnis, or a minor. We continue in the Mishnah. Hisia Vigirsha. Hisia means the marriage was consummated. Nisuin. And then she was divorced. Hisia Vinis Armala. She married and then became an almona, ksubasa shela. Rashi, ksubasa shela demishisia, from the point that the nisuin took place, pokar rishuso, the father's control or dominion over her ceases. Ubasa gevaina zlinan. We look at the time of collection. The gevaina. Basar hachihu, the gevaina, the point of collection, the time of collection is after she's left her father's domain. V'loaz lima basar ksiva, and we don't focus or emphasize the point at which the ksuba was written out, lomar, and then say hayol v'rishayna nichtava ba'idu b'shus ha'av tevedav. The first ksuba, when it was written prior to the Nisuin. So she was still in the father's domain, and therefore it should go to the father. That we do not say according to the Tanakhama. Let's continue in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer HaRishon HaShalav. The first Ksuba, in the these cases of Hisia Vigirsha, that Ksuba will go to the father. Amru lo, the Rabbanan said to Rabbi Yehuda, Mishiyasiya ain lavia reshusba, from the point that she is married off with the consummation of the marriage, the father no longer has any control or rights to her income. The Gemara is medayik, makes a reference to the careful choice of words of the Mishnah to draw a particular conclusion. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Noseya topic heading, Midiyuk Lashon HaMishnah, from careful reading of the language of the Mishnah, Rayin, we see the Isha Muhzekis Katlonis Achri Pamayim, that a woman could be categorized as a Katlonis after two husband deaths. Katlonis literally means a murderous woman. Now, we don't mean murder in the premeditated fashion, but the idea that a woman who had two husbands die on her indicates that there's something dangerous about being married to this lady. That's a very, let's say, superficial initial presentation of the matter, something that is worth looking into on its own, and the halacha lemaisa ramifications. But that's beyond the scope of our shiur. Now the Gemara. Taimo de hesiav agirsha hesiav enes armala. The Mishnah features a woman that had initially married and got divorced, married a second husband, consummated the marriage, and then he died. Avol nes armala tre zimni, if both husbands had died on her, su lochazio linsubi, she wouldn't be fit to marry a third husband, because after the death of two husbands, she's considered a woman that causes husbands to die. And the Tana was very careful in presenting his examples, presenting a case where there is Rashi's lashon is the Mishnah didn't want to feature an example of something that has this puronus aspect. Puronus is translated as a punishment or let's say defeatist type atmosphere. The Agav Urche, the Gemara continues, Agav Urche Kososim Lontano Kerebi. And by the way, we have an unnamed Mishnah that favors the opinion of Rebbe, Diomar Betre Zimni Havya Chazoka, that after the recurrence of the same thing twice, as opposed to Rav Shmuel Gamliel says three times, Rebbe says after two times, that establishes a status. And after two husbands that would have died on her, she would have been established as a katlonis, a woman that is responsible for the cause of her husbands to die. Before we continue, we glance at the side. We have a nosei mivne heading. Shortly we'll see diamonds appearing. These are shnei Lishonos shall Rabbi Rav Yosef Lahazbi Shitas Rav Yehuda b'Mishnah. Two versions of Rabbi and Rav Yosef who join up together to explain the position of Rav Yehuda in the Mishnah. The Gemara. Rav Yehuda Omer Harishono Shalav. Rav Yehuda spoke about first woman. The first marriage was a consummated marriage, and she was subsequently divorced. Nevertheless, the father gets the ksuba. My time at Rav Yehuda, what's the explanation for Shitas Rav Yehuda? After all, it's fairly well known that after Nisuin, a girl leaves her father's domain. So how is it that the father is getting the ksuba of his daughter that became Nisua and then divorced? Let's just repeat and remind ourselves, we're talking about girls that are that are within the realm of either Ketanos or Naros. But nevertheless, once the girl is Nisua, she leaves her father's realm. So why is it that he's getting the Ksuba? Rabba Rav Yosef Mitravayu Hoyel, and you'll notice we double underlined the word Hoyel for emphasis purposes, where we can focus on the reason given. Hoyel Umishas Erusin Zocha Bohen Ho'av. Since at the time of Erusin, with the first husband, the father, he gains rights to her ksuba. If we look at Rashi, the Mishas Erusin, Shabal Rishon is chayev lo ksuba v'zocha bo'av. At the point of Erusin with the first husband, that is the point at which he becomes bound, duty bound, to provide the ksuba. And at that point, she was still in the father's domain, and hence he's zochin it. Rashi continues and says, "Aval be'erusin sheni lo zocha." In regard to the erusin with the second man, the father is not going to merit or have a claim on it. From the point that she consummated her marriage with the first husband, the father is eliminated from the picture. Let's continue in the Gemara text. Mosiv Rava. Rav Yehuda Omer, Harishona Shalav. Rav Yehuda says that the first ksuba will go to the father. Umoide Rav Yehuda b'ma'aris izbito kshiktana ubogra. Rav Yehuda will concede in a case where a man married off his daughter when she was still a minor, and then she reached bagrus, means she crossed the 12 and a half year mark. The achakach niseis, and then she consummated her marriage. She'ein lovia rishus ba, that the father has no claim on money that she would collect. Amai, why is that the case? In other words, if Rabbo and Rav Yosef's explanation before is correct, hachinami lemo say to over here, hayul mishas erusin zocha boheno av. At the time of the erusin, the father. Gains his claim to the ksuba, because at that point the husband becomes duty bound to provide a ksuba, and at that point she's still in the father's domain. So this source that indicates of course within Reb Yehuda that the father does not get the ksuba, even though the erusin took place when she was still clearly in his domain, that is a problem for the explanation Rabbi Rav Yosef, number one, had given. Elo, I itmar, hochi itmar. Rabbi Rav Yosef and Travayu, they both say, Hayul ubirshuso nichtavim. The explanation of Rav Yehuda in the Mishnah is that the ksuba, the first ksuba, was written when she was still in the father's domain. And this is not the case where she becomes a bogeres before the nisuin. In our case, she did not become a bogeres. In the Mishnah's case, we have a ktana, that hisiovia, the nisuin took place before she was a bogeres, so that the ksuba was written up while the daughter was fully in her father's domain. The Tanaic source that was quoted as a kashan Rabbi Yosef describes a father who had ma'ares his bito when she was a ktana, but in the meantime the ksuba was not written up. She then became a bogeres before the nisuin, but by becoming a bogeres she leaves the father's domain completely, and then the ksuba is written up. It's written up at a point she's not in the father's domain anymore. That's why the father is described as Ein Lovia Rishus Ba. As you can see, there's a slash mark indicating that that which follows is a new trend of thought. On the side, under the Nosei, the topic heading, we've written Mimosai Chals Chus Gvio L'Tashlum Aksuba Mimishubadim. Mishubadim is the general term for property lien. That means when someone becomes indebted to a particular party, that particular party has a claim on the individual's property holdings, and any subsequent sales of property to others do not preclude the original party from laying claim on those properties. He has the original party with his claim has a lien on the properties. That's called shibudim. We speak here about a ksuba. A man marries a woman. He thereby becomes indebted to her. If that husband happens to have other properties, and he sells off those other properties, are they subject to the wife's collecting from them? Of course, in the event of a divorce or his death. The Gemara. Umigva me'emas gavya. From what point does the wife have a lien on her husband's properties? Omar Rav Huna, mono masaimin o erisin, the basic ksuba, which is established by the Rabbonan, the Takonas Rabbonan, the rabbis instituted the mono for a widow that is being married, or a virgin marriage, 200 zuz. That basic sums become indebted to the woman from the husband's properties from the time of Erusin. The Tosefes min anesuin. Tosefes is sums of money that the husband might add to the basic sum. She will have a right to collect from any properties that he sold, provided they were sold after they had consummated their marriage. So the basic amount, the mona or mosayim, the 100 or the 200 zuz, any properties that the husband sold after the erusin, even if they were sold before the nisuin, they become indebted to the wife. In other words, she can collect up to 200 zuz worth of property that he may have sold after the erusin. She has first claims on those properties. However, the Tosefis, that is only Mishas Nisuin. The Rashi adds a few lines from the end of the narrow lines. The Tosefis, Sheme'almo hi Bo'ala, it comes from outside. That means it's not a result of the Rabbonon's Takona, the Rabbonon instituting it. It comes from the husband's good heart. Lo nishtabit adzman ksiva saksuba shekonu miyodo vikosav. The lien that she has on his properties regarding the Tosefes does not set in until the time of the actual writing up of the document, at which point a kinyan is made, a formal transaction or bonding is made. The mono masayim, though, is indebted from the actual erusin, which is a time prior to the writing up of the ksuba document. We continue in the Gemara. V'rav Asi Omar Echodzeh V'Echodzeh Min HaNesuin. Not only the Tosefes, but the basic ksuba as well is. She gains a lien on his properties only from the point that they consummate the marriage. That properties that the husband might have sold after the erusin, but prior to the nisuin, she has no claim on them. Let us take a look at the Rashi at the end of the narrow lines. Echad zeh ve'echad zeh min hanisuin, di gufa, the girl herself, the wife herself, mochala l'shibud kama, she forgives or foregoes on the original lean, v'nisratza b'zman ha'kosu b'shtar ha'ksuba k'chol ha'mufurish bo b'ein ikur b'ein tosefes. So that even though there might have been a ksuba obligation from the point of erusin, once the ksuba document is written up, she foregoes any earlier liens or claims she might have had on her properties, and then everything becomes meshubad. The lien is formed only from the date that is written into the shtar ksuba. And we say that includes the mona masayim as well. As the Gemara goes on, you can see a question is raised regarding Rav Huna's approach. Umi amar Rav Huna hachi, would Rav Huna have said what he did, making the split between the mona masayim versus the Tosefes? V'itmar haitzia alof shtei ksubos. A woman who produces two ksuba documents, achas shel masayim, the achas shel shlosh meis. One indicating that there, she has a claim of 200, and that's the earlier of the two documents that she produces. And the second document, the later date in it, 300 is written into it. The Omer Rav Huna, Bosa Ligvois Masayim, Goiva Mizman Rishon. Rav Huna, and whose name we dashed underline because we're focusing on his Shita right now, he says if she wants to claim from the earlier date, she wants to claim the 200, she has a right to claim from the earlier date. Any properties that were sold after that earlier date, she would have a claim on them. Shlosh Meis, if she comes to collect from the larger amount, the 300, but then she's more limited in whom she can turn to for collection. That's Goiva Mizman Sheni. She can collect only from the date written in that, which is the later date. Now, what do we see in the meantime? We see she only claims one of them. Ve'im Esau, if the original Rav Huna statement was really made, Tigvi Mosayim Mizman Rishon, let her collect the 200, which represents the basic amount from the earlier date, Umeo Mizman Sheni, and the additional 100 from the later date, that we would call the Tosefes, the additional sum. And yet that's not what Rav Huna says over here. The Gemara responds. Here's an answer. It's a long answer. Ulitameich, according to the way you are looking at things, Tigvi Chomesh Meos Kulam, let her be entitled to collect the total, the entire 500. Masayim Mizman Rishon, the basic 200 from the early date, plus Meo Mizman Sheni, the 300 from the second date. But now that Rav Huna never said. Elo Chomesh Meos Maitai Molo Gavya, why is that not raised as an option? Kevon de lo kosav law, since in the second document the following language was missing. This is an Aramaic sentence. So visi velsifus loch klas meo amosayim. This was not written. Visi means I desired to add 300 above the 200. That wasn't in the second document. The second document that had 300 written into it, the amount of 300. Hachi Komala, what he's trying to say in that second document of 300, he's trying to say as follows. Imizman Rishon Gavias Gavya Masayim. If you want to collect from the earlier date, which will enable her to have, let's say, more property options as far as the lien is concerned, so then you can collect only 200. E Mizman Sheni Gavias, if your desire is to collect from the later date, which would limit you in the amount of the different properties from which she could collect, well then Gavya Tlas Mea. So with that we understand why she isn't getting the 500. So Hachanami, we continue at the top of Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. So too here, Haini Taima de Lo Gavya, this is the reason that she is not collecting. Midalo Kosav law, Osifus Lochme, I'm Asayim, that I'm adding 100 on the 200. Achuli Achilte Lishibuda Kama. She is foregoing the original Shibud. So that in a situation that the language of Tosefes appears, the language of an additional sum appears, There's a basic summon, and added upon that is an additional summon. The language reflects that. Then the original comment of Ravuna stands, that the Monom Asayim from the Erusin and the Tosefis from the Nisuin. However, if that language is not there, so it's a question of either 200 or 300, if she wants to collect the 300, the 300 is a reflection, the fact that the Tosefis language was missing, it reflects the idea that she forfeited the option of collecting from the earlier time, and that the entire 300 would be something that she collects from the later time. As we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We have a nosei, a topic heading, that reads as follows: Liyashev dinoi shel Rav Huna. We want to resolve Rav Huna's halacha, that he said the iboi b'hai gavio, iboi b'hai gavio, in the case of two shtoros, one with an earlier date, one with a later date. We saw the earlier date in the example from before had a smaller sum, the one with the later date had a greater sum, and Rav Huna said that if you want, you can collect the lesser sum from the earlier date, which gives you more collection options, or if you prefer to collect the larger sum, you can collect from the later date, which limits your collection options. We want to resolve that imdino shel Rav Nachman, with in light of Rav Nachman, to align it with Rav Nachman's halacha, which says shnei shtoros hayoytzin al soda achas bozachazef. If you have two documents, let's say two documents of sale regarding a field, and they have two different dates, one an earlier date and one a later date. Bitel sheni esarishon, the second document with the later date voids or cancels the first document. Mikrim shedinoi shel Rav Nachman eino betokef. We'll also see cases where the teaching of Rav Nachman is not binding. So now we go back to the Gemara. Third line from the top. Omar Mor. It was said earlier, and this is from Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. This, if you look back at Mem Gimel Amud Beis, correction there, you'll see a parallel arrow also to the right-hand side of the Gemara text, the lower fifth of the page, pointing to Rav Huna's din. And by the way, Rashi on the third narrow line is a basis for our use of these arrows. Notice what Rashi says, Omamar ad Rav Huna koi. This quote is going back to Rav Huna, Diomar in Bosa Ligvois Mosayim Vehule. If you want to collect the 200, the lesser sum, you can collect from the earlier date. If you want to collect the greater sum, the 300, you can only collect from the later date. So we're going back on that. So Omar Mor, Ibaya Bahai Gavya, Ibaya Bahai Gavya. If you want, you can collect with this one, and if you want, you can collect with that one. Lema pliga de Rav Nachman. The fact that Rav Huna gives you two options, this would seem to be at odds with Rav Nachman's teaching. The Omer Rav Nachman, shnei shtoros hayoytzin boze achar zeh. Two documents over one field. Let's say Reuven gives a field or sells a field to Shimon, and in one document he writes the sale took place the first of Nisan. The second document says the sale took place, or the gift took place, the first of Sivan. That's 3 months later. What does Rav Nachman say? Bitel Sheni Es Horishon. The second document, the Echod B'Sivan document in our example, would cancel the first. In other words, as far as we are concerned, the sale took place only from the first of Sivan. We're not going to elaborate on all the practical ramifications of that. It's sufficient for us to focus right now on this idea that the second document neutralizes or cancels the first. That would seem to be at odds with Rav Huna. The Gemara responds, Lav miyitmar lo marav papa. Was it not said concerning this by Rav Papa the following? Umoide Rav Nachman, de'i oisif bei dikla. If in the second document there is something additional. In other words, in the first document, a field was sold. In the second document, in addition to the field, an extra tree was sold. L'toisefes kasve. That was written in as something additional. And in a case like that, the second document does not cancel the first document. Ha'chanami, so too with regard to Rav Huna's din. Ha'oisef law midi. There was 300 that was added. In other words, the second document had more in it than the first document. First document had 200 written in. The second document had a greater amount written in. So in a case like that, even Rav Nachman agrees that the second document doesn't cancel the first document. Gufa, Omar Rav Nachman, Shnei Shtoros Hayotzin Bozachar Zeh. Two contracts or two documents concerning one field. The first document having Echod B'Nisan written in, the second document having Echod B'Sivan written in. Bitel Sheni Asorishon. The second document cancels the first one. If we look at Rashi, by the way, he gives a practical application of this. Bitel Sheni Asorishon. V'im kosav lo achrayis. If, let us say, a guarantee was written into the sale. V'torfua mimenu. And the purchaser, the receiver of the field, lost the field because someone else had a claim on it. It was collected from him. Ein goyve elo mizman sheni. He can collect only from the original seller's properties that he may have sold after that second date. Vachinami nemo rishon botil lei the achle lishibude kamo. And likewise, the issue in the original piece of Gemara with Rav Nachman and Rav Huna, the suggestion was that we should say that also by Rav Huna that the second document cancels the first. And we then answered, as we saw, that in the case that the second document has something additional to it, then it doesn't represent a cancellation of the first document. Let's continue in the Gemara. Omar Rav Papa Umoide Rav Nachman Di Oisif Bei Dikla L'Toisefes Kasve. And we actually saw this mentioned before, that Rav Nachman will concede that if in the second shtar there's something additional, even an extra tree is written into the second shtar, it's written for, the second shtar was written to reflect that additional element and not to cancel the first element. And of course the nafka mina is, as we said before, that if he should want to exercise the rights of the second shtar with the later date in it, he'll have a right to expect the tosefes as well, the additional element. And if he prefers having the shtar with the earlier date in it, so he's not going to have access or a claim on the tosefes, on that additional element. We continue with more cases of two shtaros. And you'll see the nuance in the following Gemara. Pshita Rishon B'Mecher V'Sheni B'Matana. If the first document is written with a language of sale, a sale in it, and the second document is written with the language of a gift, in other words, a field is being transferred from Reuven to Shimon, the first document, Aleph Nisan, says a sale of the field took place from Reuven to Shimon. And an Aleph Sivan, a document appears that says that the field was given as a gift from Reuven to Shimon. Liyapois koichoi hu de kosavle mishum dina de bar metra. The second document, even if it doesn't have any tosefes in it, it is not here to cancel the first document. It is here to overrule the, we'll say it once again, the Matona document, the second document, which is a gift document, has come to supersede or circumvent the rule of Dina of Bar Metzra. Let's explain that a little bit. When a person sells a field, he's obligated to give the first opportunity of purchase to the Bar Metzra, the neighbors who has a common border with the field. Let us say that for whatever reason, I don't want to give the neighbor the option. The law says you have to give him the option, but that applies only in a case of a sale. If you want to give property that you own as a gift to someone, then you don't have to take into consideration your neighbor. When you want to give a gift, you give a gift to someone you happen to have a strong bond with. You have an affinity toward them. It's not necessarily the case with your neighbor. So that when it comes to the rule of Bar Metzra, of common border, you are restricted when it comes to sales, but not when it comes to a gift. So that what you saw over here is that a person sold the field to someone other than the neighbor. That sale could be threatened unless there is an indication that he gave that field as a gift to that individual, the purchaser, if you will. So that he prepared the second document to increase the strength of the holding of the fellow to whom he sold the field, that he shouldn't be confronted by the bar metzra, by the neighbor who would complain that he wasn't given a right to purchase the field. The kol shekein, and all the more so, rishon b'matona v'sheni b'mecher, where the first document reflected a giving of the field as a gift, and the second document with a later date as if it were sold. The Amrinon, we say mishum dino de balchoiv hu de kosav kain. And here we look into Rashi. Cross from here, Rashi says dino de balchoiv, de iosi balchoiv v'toref le mine. If a previous creditor had come to the owner of these field, that is being sold now, with a very early claim, and with that he would be able to take away the field from the receipt, from the one who received it as a gift, claiming, you know, you got a field on which I already had an earlier claim, I had a lien on that field. In order to give a sense of ownership, or of let's say a guarantee that the gift I gave you was something that you could rely on, I prepared a second document indicating that it was a sale. And with that, you, the receiver of the gift, knows that you can now seek other properties of mine as compensation for the field that you lost to that earlier creditor. And that's what Rashi says here. Read again the Rashi. Diosi balchov v'toref le mine, kibel olov achrayas b'shtar hasheni, denahader v'nigvi mine, mois aksuvim kan. That with this second document that entitles the receiver of the gift to, in the event that he loses that field because of an earlier creditor, he will be able to seek compensation for his lost field. If it were a mere gift and was left like that, you don't get compensation for a gift that you happen to lose. But if the gift is also described as a sale, so the amount of money that was written in that you ki'ilu, that is as if you paid for it, you'd be able to recover that amount. Ella. We continue in the Gemara. Ish shneihem b'mecher, shneihem b'matana. If both documents reflect a sale, or both documents reflect a gift, b'tel sheni es harishon. The document with the later date in it cancels the document with the earlier date. My time, why do you say that? Why is it mevatel? Why does it void the earlier one? Raphram Omar, and here we have two explanations. Raphram says, Amar odoye oidile. The author of the shtar is in effect confessing that the first document was a forgery. Rashi says, oidile, balashtar sharishan mezuyof hoya, v'nisratza alo achir ligvois mizman sheni. And they came to a meeting of the minds that the collection, if it would come to that, would be from the date in the second shtar. Rav Acho Omar, Eimar Achuli Achle Leshibude. The idea of the second shtar canceling or voiding the first shtar is a reflection of the receiver of the shtar foregoing or forfeiting his lien, the earlier lien that he might have otherwise had. My binayu, what difference is there between Raphram's explanation and Rav Acho's explanation? As far as the law is concerned, so the second shtar cancels or voids the first shtar, and the deal is said to have taken place only from the second date. What difference is there in terms of these explanations? Iko binayu, and you'll notice there are three cases or three examples of a point of difference. Number one, Eiroi Sadi. Number two, Ishlumi Piri. Number three, Ulataska. The first nafkamina, the first Iko binayu, the first point of difference would be regarding the witnesses that signed the document. Are these witness is going to be considered henceforth reliable people? According to Raphram, no, they are people that signed a forgery. According to Rav Acha, there's no issue of forgery, and the witnesses that signed the first document would still be considered acceptable. We're simply saying that the receiver forfeited any liens that he might have had from the earlier date. But as far as the witnesses are concerned, their reputation is maintained. Lishlumi Peri, Rashi says, She'ochal loikech bein zman rishon lizman sheni. The person who acquired the field, let us say that he consumed fruits, produce from the field starting from the earlier date. Does he have a right to have consumed those fruits? So Rashi explains that Le Raphram, according to Raphram, who said that the second shtar is a demonstration that the first shtar was a forgery. So a forgery means there was nothing legally that took place. And if you ate from the produce of the property from that first date, you have to pay for it. The third nafkamina is letaska. And this is an interesting word because if you do a little letter switch, you can see the word tax. And that's what it is. It's a land tax payable to the authorities. The purchaser of the receiver of this field, will he pay from the earlier date or not? According to Raphram, the obligation to pay is upon the original owner. After all, the first shtar was a forgery, meaning that there was no sale from that earlier date. It was the owner's property until the second date, the second shtar. According to Rav Acha, the first date is not a doesn't reflect a it's, it doesn't reflect a forgery. What we're saying that the receiver foregoes any liens that he may have on other properties that he would have had from that first date. But as far as the ownership is concerned, he is considered the owner even from the first date, and therefore, according to Rav Acha, the purchaser will have to pay the taxes from that first date. My havi Allah diksuba. The Gemara here is a throwback to what we discussed on Mem Gimel Amud Beis. We have a star that you can see to the left hand, to the right hand side of the Gemara text back on Mem Gimel Amud Beis. The Gemara had asked Umigve Meimas Gavya regarding a ksuba and the woman's rights to collect from other properties that the husband may have sold off. From what point does the wife have a lien on her husband's properties? That's the Gemara's, what the Gemara wants to know is Lamaisa, Halacha Lamaisa, and so what's the final law? Toshma, Diomar of Yudomar Shmuel, Mishum Rebelozer Rebbe Shimon. Monomo Simon Erison, the basic ksuba amount, the 100 for the almona, the 200 for the basula, is collectible from the original erusin. Even though at that point the ksuba document wasn't necessarily written up, but there's a takonas chachomim that ensure the woman a basic ksuba. So from that point in time, she has a claim on the husband's properties. Any properties that he might have sold after that point in time, she would have a first crack at it. She would have an earlier claim. The Tosefes min hanisuin. Tosefes is the any amount that he might have written in above the basic ksuba that she has a claim on only from the point that they consummated their marriage. The Chachomim omrim echod zeh ve'echod zeh min hanisuin. The Chachomim are, we'll say, more limiting as far as the woman is concerned, and that even the basic mona or mosayim is from the point of nisuin. The Ilchason, the Gemara itself, rules echod zeh ve'echod zeh min hanisuin. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.